Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, that's me. Hi.
Hey, everybody, I want you to look up. Just turn towards the skies. What do you think? What do you think?
I think it's windy and it's supposed to drop 40 degrees over the next 12 hours here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, it's a little chilly.
I really need to get this light fixed. It's been out for like a solid month and I've just turned on more studio lights to compensate.
No! I'm talking about Starlink. SpaceX launched another 60 satellites and actually like the first official 60 today.
So I know that we talked briefly about like the test tweet that Elon Musk was able to send. Is it functional or still, you know, up and coming or what?
Well, you know, Brian, when you first had your property, you could bring an iPhone there and make videos from there. So was it functional?
I mean, it definitely was. I mean, we're within sight of that LTE tower over there. Yeah.
So sure. Yeah. I mean, they worked, but I mean, they're planning by the end of next year to actually start offering commercial service, but they launched 60 satellites today. And you know, they did the 60 more. I think these were improved the next gen satellites. And this is, I think, start of now the run of the continuous every couple weeks launching the Starlinks in there. What's also cool is they had a booster that had been used like three times. So this was the fourth use for the booster and they captured it. They used two fairings that had been used before. And so that's part of how Starlink is able to save money. And for those of you who may be new to the show and maybe haven't heard of it, Starlink is SpaceX. SpaceX is Elon Musk's rocket company. That's their plan to blanket the globe in low Earth orbit satellites to provide internet connection. So you'd put a pizza box sized transceiver on your roof and basically have super fast internet just about anywhere in the world. But they want to start with areas that are very, very scarce as far as population, because that's where, you know, there's a big demand for internet connectivity. And it's kind of easier satellites because one satellite can cover a lot. Can cover, you know, a large area. If you have a bunch of people like in a big city, you know, you need more satellites, but they're going to move towards that over time.
Very cool. So how far off do you think we are from this being, I assume there'll be regional rollouts of this. Like at what point will this start to be, I don't know, something that the three of us will want to get our hands on?
Well, you know, that's they filed for an application to put up like 40,000 satellites eventually. And I think they probably made their business case first with people who were in more, one, probably for the military, and then two, you know, commercial enterprises that are in rural areas are that need that. And then basically to keep adding satellites and eventually get to that kind of coverage. So, you know, I don't think they've officially said like, you know, when somebody living in a city would get it, but you know, it's going to take several years of, you know, launching these things up there. But they say, you know, in the next year is going to start commercial service, which kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, and I think also the big money here is going to be with the private contractors that are going to be able to get their own, you know, versions of this. So I think that's for SpaceX, the profitable company. I think this is a gigantic step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was here now and, you know, I could, you know, get rid of my provider and just, you know, move to this thing. But it takes time, you know, they got to launch these things 60 at a time. But that's part of what they talk about, you know, Starship, this weird, amazing, fully reusable spacecraft. Part of the business case is, yeah, when we have this thing in there, we're going to be launching these things like 800 at a time or something just insane. And you know, and their satellites, it's worth looking at. Go to starlink.com. You can take a look at the satellite itself. It's like this big flat kind of like pizza box that then has the antenna, like one, or excuse me, the solar array unfolds from it. They're using the thrusters that help it maintain and deorbit when they need to. They're like these Krypton ion thrusters. and kind of just a different take on it, you know. So the future's now.
Very cool.
So, gentlemen.
Yeah.
All right, who did it? Somebody fess up.
I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't do it, because that's something that somebody who did it would say, but I'm going to not say that.
I'm going to say I didn't do it as long as Brian didn't do it. But if Brian did it, there's a fair chance I also did it, and I may or may not have done it first.
All right, you know what? Let's get it all out there. I'm thinking of doing it, but I haven't done it yet. And I mentioned that if I do it, I ain't going to admit to it. And I'm going to let Justin take the fall for it, whatever it is.
So I did it, but I wouldn't tell you if I did do it unless I didn't do it. In that case, I'm just giving you a little smokescreen, despite the fact that I'm just saying right now, I'm almost positive that Brian did do it, unless it's awesome. In that case, I did do it, and I did it first.
Let me be clear. I did not do it, but if it was done and it was rad, then I'm the type of person who might have done it, but denied having done it because he's too humble and rad and can handle the fact that he doesn't need credit for every single thing he did when it's awesome. But if it wasn't awesome, then that's not the type of thing that I would have done. And so, of course, I'm going to deny having done it. But unless that made me a martyr in a good way, then I'll take the fall for having done it. Sorry, what is it?
I think Bryce did it. I think that's what you guys are telling me. So... I'm talking about who stole Wizard Rock.
What?
And I don't mean like who stole the sound Wizard Rock, like Harry and the Potters or whatever. I'm talking about the actual rock called Wizard Rock in Arizona, right? This one-ton rock by Highway 89, it went missing. It just vanished. People are like, who stole Wizard Rock? And here, let me describe this. This one-ton, described as a beautiful black boulder with white quartz running through it. The one-ton boulder is believed to have been removed by someone using heavy equipment, right? So this mysterious Wizard Rock, but it gets more mysterious after this, but it went missing.
So you got a one-ton
Wizard
Rock
was like a type of sound that somebody overheard in Liverpool or whatever.
No, that's what they like Harry Potter fan music is called.
Yeah. Yeah, Wizard Rock.
Yeah, Harry and the Potters, that's like what they do. So
this is a one-ton boulder, all of a sudden mysteriously gone. Well, I'm saying I'm not taking myself out of contention, but I'm strongly thinking that I didn't, that you can't prove that I did it. But also, if there's anybody who is in the market for a one-ton boulder separately, my DMs are open.
I would love to believe that Justin is like confused in the middle of a full-on jury trial where he's confusing his situation for being like on America's Got Talent or something. He's like, I'm not taking myself out of contention. I think I still might be in this.
He's getting all the press attention. His name is in the news.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we found this videotape that totally, you know, exonerates you. Like, oh, wait up. Yeah. I've got a podcast series I want to do after this, and I can't drop out of the news.
So how would you move a one-ton rock? Like, is that even? All right, so that's a picture of Wizard Rock.
One ton at a time, Justin. That's how you do it.
What's like the tonnage of like an average pickup truck?
Hold on. Can we back all the way up? Who the hell cares about some damn rock? What's so special about this rock?
What if that rock was called Earth, Brian? How do you feel now?
The question stands, sir. What's so special like the Earth. About
Got
this
it.
Rock
you
called
don't
Earth?
Like the Earth? So the size of the rock is what's important to you, Brian. Is that what you're saying?
I'm asking you, look, the obligation is on you to explain to me what's so special about this rock.
Apparently, a rock of this size could be worth $200 for the minerals that they contain. Removal of rocks and minerals from natural forests without a permit is illegal, though.
All right. Look.
Wait, hold on. Wait. You can get $200 out of that thing?
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is get a one-ton rock out of the desert?
You do have to commit a felony, I believe, so.
That's easy money, baby.
Oh, Brian, gosh, it's $200
I'll
there.
I'll buy it. There it is. $200.
Oh, is this a confession? Are you confessing?
Hold up here. Wait. Let's freeze for a moment. The rock is gone, and Brian now has $200.
Yeah.
Brian was waving $200 bills in front of us to buy a rock that was stolen, which, Brian, I'm sorry.
We need to dust that money for rock prints.
So somebody steals a rock for just the mineral value? It's not even like a famous rock for having...
I mean, it's pretty.
It's famous now. I mean, it's probably the most famous rock there is now.
It's infamous now.
Hold on. I was Googling Wizard Rock, and I was seeing so many responses, but that is indeed for the musical genre based on Harry Potter.
Ready for the twist?
Yeah.
It got returned.
What?
Wizard Rock mysteriously reappeared.
Hold on. So Wizard Rock left enough so that we saw the ad or we saw the television stories about how it left, and now it has come back?
Yes.
What?
But
we don't know.
Without explanation or anything, just suddenly it's back.
Wizard Rocks do what Wizard Rocks do. And I realize Wizard Rock
never disappears
really
at the wrong time, nor comes back at the wrong time.
Yeah.
I don't want to be one to start spreading malicious rumors, but how sure are we that this was not an inside job by the National Forest?
Wizard Rock was an inside job.
I mean, it does seem like a perennial problem of national parks is getting people interested in coming to visit. And it does seem like a bunch of wonderful 20-somethings might want to come up with a scheme to attract attention. And it seems like having a rock with the awesome name Wizard Rock vanish and then reappearing... If the shoe fits, you must... Acquit that rock.
They may be committing a felony in doing that, but I'm waiting now for the really slow video zoom into Wizard Rock where we see written into small print, Epstein didn't kill himself.
I mean, all right. I don't think that it is necessarily malicious, but at a certain point, maybe... Because, all right, you need special equipment to lift a one-ton anything, right? Like this is not just somebody rolls up with their Silverado and, you get four friends, they pop it in the back, and then you go mudding. Like, this is a operation, one that one would assume would come with tire marks out toward where it is, and then all of a sudden it's right back. I don't know. This just seems to me like something that somebody picked up a rock that they weren't supposed to. They were clearing something. It goes into the garage for a little bit, and then next thing you know, they're like, "Oh my God, that was Wizard Rock." The police got called. They put the rock back. No harm, no foul. And the folks who picked it up, maybe without realizing what it was, now they're not going to get in trouble.
And then at some point, like, one of the guys leans over to the other and says, "Hey man, is that Wizard Rock? We'll turn it up." That's a reference.
You know, it's not Wizard Rock, but I assure you it's just as cool. Supporting us on Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much friends. Wizard Rock. Let's be real.
Yeah, all right. So here's the deal. There's this website called patreon.com/weirdthings. And on that website, you can kick us some money. And we do this show each and every week for you, but... any little bit of support that you give us, if you dig the program, is greatly appreciated. Just head on over there, patreon.com/weirdthings.
So we had this was sent in. This was something that was sent in and something I'd found, and I realized that we should have talked about this a while ago, but kind of very fascinating. You guys heard of McCamey Manor?
No.
So you talk, you know, if you do up a list of like extreme haunted houses, you look at MCKAME Manor, it starts to pop up and you can find some Reddit forums about this. At first glance, it sounds like another one of these haunted houses that's issuing out their sort of their own press releases and stuff, or faking stuff to make them sound like, oh, it's the most terrifying, scary experience, right? And then you read it and you find out what this is, and then you're like, oh no, this sounds like legit. And it's not really a haunted house. It is called a survival horror experience. And basically, it's this guy that lives now in, I guess, like Tennessee. And people show up and they sign like a 20-page waiver. And then he just, and he and his friends just sort of like find ways to torture you.
Wait, so, this what? Is, okay, this is a very complicated emotional place for me because I have certain opinions as an anarcho-libertarian. I also have other opinions as an artist and a free expressionist. I don't know any of the details of all this, but I mean, if you're signing that much paper saying it's okay to do whatever it is you want to do to create this performance experience, that seems okay, question mark. I'm going to regret saying that because I'm going to find out something terrible about it.
Well, so at one point, cops were called in because they heard stories of somebody being dragged behind a pickup truck and a woman screaming, and they went there. In the basement, they found this woman who was dirty and disheveled and whatnot, and they're like, ma'am, are you all right? She says, yes, I signed up for this. And they're like, okay, all right, carry on. And every time they go put on one of these experiences, they call the police and say, hey, just so you know, some new idiot showed up for this experience, so you might hear some screams and stuff. And they talk about how it's supposed to be like a 10-hour ordeal, but nobody really gets past the first minute. One guy says, yeah, I showed up. They put me in a straitjacket. They wrapped me in a fence, and they started to dip me upside down into a pool of water. And I'm like, I'm out. Just terrifying.
Wow. He says this is a lot of hypnosis, right? So this is from the Washington Post. The Manor is an interactive experience that relies on mind games to make people believe things that aren't happening. He says people are not really waterboarded, for example, but he uses hypnosis and other mind control techniques to put that thought in their heads. Now, as magic and magic-related gentlemen, how much weight is there in that thought?
Separate, like, here's an adjacent thought. Like, part of the reason BDSM is a unique type of sexual foray in that normally any kind of money exchanged for sexual gratification is considered prostitution or whatever. But weirdly, BDSM requires that money be changed hands, because if you assault somebody, if you hit somebody, whether money is exchanged or not, then that is a crime. But it's only the fact that you have given people money that is evidence that no, this is a consensual activity on that. So I wonder if this is entering similar territory where it would straight up be illegal, but the mere fact that people are spending money for it helps to indemnify the people committing everything.
We didn't get to the compensation, and that's kind of just as equally interesting. And so if you sign up for this, the price is to bring a 50-pound bag of dog food, which he then donates to a local animal shelter.
Seems responsible.
And that's that? Just that's a 50-pound bag of dog food?
This is, you know, really it's an animal charitable enterprise, if you think about it.
All right.
So it's worth reading up about people have interviewed this guy. They say he just sounds like kind of just like a scary, frightening kind of guy, but everything appears to be legit. And this is a guy that literally, and he and his, the actors, you know, hey, this person showed up, so let's go do it. Let's just give them this experience that's like hazing. But like to Bryce's question about the whole psychological or the hypnosis aspect of it, hypnosis gets to be is one of those words that you can kind of apply to a lot of things of like, well, you thought it was this, but it was this. You were hypnotized. And if you look back in a lot of the hazing rituals and a lot of the hazing that was done by different groups and stuff, you find a lot of things they would do, like you're blindfolded and they make you reach inside of a toilet and it's actually bananas and stuff and things like that that might, you know, you could, you know, very generously describe as, well, we hypnotized you because we set up your expectation and you thought you're going to grab something else, but you didn't.
So are we on board for this? Do we think this is a fun, consensual, rollicking experience?
I one out of three consensual. I have no problem with somebody because, I mean, if we start saying, because if you can back out anytime you want, and if you're in theory, like not really getting physically damaged, I mean, even that there's a, you know, some sort of latitude within that, like, you know, who are we to say? I mean, you know, do we want to shut down tattoo parlors and, you know, CrossFit? Maybe. Yeah. Right. I mean, now so, that I think about it.
I do love the fact that you put tattoo parlors and CrossFit like in the same breath as if there's barely a difference between the two.
So I think we have kind of two vectors to deal with. Is it legal and is it cool? And I think that we are all on the same side that this is legal. This is not a you know, this isn't a Saw situation. Like the person is doing their due diligence in terms of charging, letting people know exactly what they're going to get. They're cooperating with the authorities. Now, the question then becomes, is it cool? Like, is it this? Because I think the reason why the story went viral was because the idea of the super boutique, you know, David Fincher's The Game level haunted house, specifically in that October stretch when haunted houses are all over the place, seems like a really kind of cool idea. But the more you look into this thing, it really just seems like maybe like a lonely guy who wants to feed his dogs and also donate to this dog charity.
Yeah. So, question. Let's say that we knew somebody who had a large area of property.
Yeah. Okay.
And people with, you know, peculiar interests, and we were going to design the Weird Things experience.
Okay. This is actually, I didn't want to tip much of this, but like, there's a number of very bizarre things I want to make happen on this property. And there are companies that can build, you know, picture little singular Arduino microchips or whatever with solar panels and whatever. I was thinking about creating different zones on the property. Like, for example, imagine one zone where all they do is they charge solar electricity all day, and then at exactly 12:43 a.m., just all these chips ask, "What are you doing here?" And then that's all it is. And then that's that one haunted zone. And then there's another haunted zone where it's like you have some that like flicker like fireflies. But then at one moment, because they got some kind of mesh network, they all synchronize and just glow all at once. And then that's it. And then it's over, right? Likewise, I want it so that when you walk onto the property, you've got a bunch of different infrared lenses that just sort of guide a pen light. So the moment you walk onto property, suddenly you have like you hear choo 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 choo, and suddenly you have just a bunch of red dots on your chest. Like there's so much insane stuff just for the sake of being insane that I want to do.
I think that's all awesome, Brian, but I think for $50 and a trip to Walmart in some of Bryce's extra time, which he doesn't have, but you could have people could show up and be like, all right, Bryce, handle it, and give them a BB gun and put some plastic goggles on somebody and do like the most dangerous game, and it'd be cool.
Yes to all of that. Like there's no bad ideas in brainstorming. I think we've got a business plan.
I'm saying it's a very cost-effective way to do it. You know, it's like, all right, Bryce, just shoot them. You know, frozen paintballs, things like that.
Let's say a year from now, right, this will have been a year plus of the 7-acre Schwood being a fully operating entity. There will have been many guests, you know, staying there, but between here and now, or then and now. Is there room for the 7-acre Schwood, like, haunted walkway? Like the tour that you do for the most hardcore fans that, you know, it's a walk and you do all that stuff. There's all that stuff. And maybe that's permanent. Maybe you just dial it up a little bit more that as you walk in, you have the little like elvish whispering that we have at the very beginning. We've always had at the very beginning of the Weird Things podcast when we do the Wired Tree read, like Brian, what would you imagine in your wildest dreams? What is the haunted walk through that woods? Because by the way, it would not take much for it to get real creepy real fast in those woods.
Okay. Yes, 100%. Maybe I've already been thinking about all this stuff. Maybe I have been looking at, so we installed these security cameras. And so these Ring security cameras let you know when something motion activates or whatever. But it's like, I want to capture there's a raccoon, there's a skunk, there's two foxes. I want to capture all of them and just like add scales to them and then just set them free again. I want to do a haunted trail thing. Look, I feel like anything I say after this moment will only take away from the magic to anybody who dares to do the haunted trail.
Well, there's, you know, the business side of it is like doing is an escape room sort of model, you know, and that might even be a thing where you let a couple other people come in there and basically pay to do it and run it, and you collect a fee from that or something. But that could be kind of a neat thing where it's your, I want to say the word adult Disneyland, but your nerdy experience thing on a much larger piece of area. The idea that, you know, escape room does not have to physically be a room. So,
heck yeah.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Still want Bryce with like the BB gun and the frozen paintballs.
Just shooting at the participants.
Shooting people. Like, hey,
I mean, like that implicates me in a very specific way that the hypnosis guy found a way to avoid.
I just feel like, oh, I want to do the Schwood gauntlet, you know, like, because there are people like, oh, sounds cool. Like, what? Well, just Bryce on the roof shooting him. Oh, cool. I'll do it. I got the t-shirt.
There are no teams like Royal Tenenbaum on the roof, fire strangers.
It's all it takes. And then some yelling, maybe some yelling. All right, time to yell out our picks.
You need a really big IQ to understand and appreciate that Rick and Morty's back. It premiere, season 4 premiere last night. I enjoyed it, and I'm happy that it's back.
That
was last
it.
Night. I thought it was next week.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Oh. Crazy. Is it good? Is it good? Good.
For yeah. Me? No. It's you know, in classic Rick and Morty fashion, there is an element of self awareness to it, but it is just, I don't know. The thing I really like about Rick and Morty is that it's just really fun science fiction writing, and it's it has its own tone, but it never sacrifices its competence in storytelling, and I just really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a fun. It's a good fun episode, and just sort of, you know, good launch to the show.
And I think also it's very much a bit of a meta commentary on the fact that this is the first episode to air since their mega deal that they got with Warner. So there's a little bit of you know, the discussion between the characters on exactly what kind of adventures they want to be going on. And I think it's one of those shows where meta commentary can be frustrating at times for me when it's the main attraction, but when it's a nice little side dish, ooh, it can be delicious.
I have started rereading, because of Andrew's enthusiasm, I'm rereading Alchemy right now. And it's great. I liked it the first time, and I'm glad I'm rereading it the second time. And I agree, Andrew, that Rory Sutherland's performance of it is exquisite.
I describe it as Bane-like.
Bane.
Yeah, play, because that's actually is my pick this week is Alchemy 2. Bryce, do you want to play a little audio for? He's got a great voice, but he sounded like he first started. Oh, here's the, you know, his you know, Bane-like voice. Let's see if we hear it.
That are worthy of experimental testing, but never expect them to be immediately popular or easy to sell, even if they're proven to work. If you would like an easy life, never come up with a solution to a problem that is drawn from a field of expertise
simply other be born
than
into
that
it.
From which it is assumed yeah. the solution will arise.
Your wish
2 years ago, my colleagues produced an extraordinary intervention to reduce crime. They hypothesized that the presence of the metal shutters that shops in crime-ridden areas cover their windows with at night may, in fact, increase the incidence of crime.
It's great. It's a great book.
Is that even how British people say proven? They say proven?
Yep.
Or is that just an I don't think I've ever heard proven. That sounds like the those dudes in American movie with Coven.
Coven, Justin.
No, it's Coven.
Oh, Coven.
I got a pick. Yeah, I got a pick. So over the weekend, a new video game came out, and it's a divisive sort of game. Not controversial, I don't think, but it's divisive on what people think about it. It is the new game from Hideo Kojima, who made the Metal Gear Solid series, and it's called Death Stranding, and it's a very weird game. You play as a courier, basically. You go and deliver packages for people in this post-apocalypse hellscape. And it's really interesting. I think it reminds me a lot. Do you guys remember, or if you heard about No Man's Sky a few
years sure.
ago? Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm having the same experience with Death Stranding that I did with No Man's Sky when it came out. And I think a lot of people are having that in the same, for good or for ill. So I think a lot of people expected No Man's Sky to be one thing, and it ended up being this other thing that took it many years to kind of get to. But I think it's really meditative. I think it can be really contemplative because you are just one person going through this barren, empty, wasteland of America, basically, and delivering packages and trying to there's a whole story bit. I've been playing it on the Twitch stream, the Twitch channel here, twitch.tv/nightattack. I think just as a game, as a routine thing, beyond the story and the characters, and the characters are neat, and the story is fascinating. The world setting of people dying is incredibly dangerous, is really cool. But just as a thing to play, I really enjoy it as in the same way I like clicker games, right? It's just it's a process, you know. I recommend it, but I also think it's going to be not for everybody.
Is it safe to say, and this is from outside the video game community, that Hideo Kojima is kind of the almost as a Scorsese or a Tarantino. Like just a singular sort of like storytelling force in a way that I can't think like, as I know Hideo Kojima's name because all my friends talk about it and they've been into this game. And even though there's a million other gigantic titles that come out that people get obsessed with, I don't know a name in the way that I know Hideo Kojima's name. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's maybe a good second place would be like David Cage, of someone who is a creator who stands side by side with his games as a personality that is known, and as someone who's like, because Hideo Kojima really loves cinema, and there's some written bits inside the game of like, you know, I used to play this old game and it was about a guy, like very self-referential and kind of hyping itself up, but he is someone who is I don't know, holds a lot of the story in his own hands, and I think I maybe Peter Molyneux back in the day would have been a similar sort of persona, of someone who is really got his hands in the entire
thing. That's the weird thing is that like I'm sure that within gaming like those names resonate, but certainly in terms of the breakout into pop culture and the fact that there's a buzz around him and the game that is unique in terms of the cult of personality for a game creator. Now, normally it's like studios or people like that that are like, you know, franchises that continue to turn out games, but the pieces inside of them are probably just powerful and potent, but they can be replaced or are replaced at a certain frequency. But not so with Hideo Kojima, for whatever reason. Like, that was a gigantic thing, and it was continually like different, you know, celebrities saying, "Oh, I'm available with this," or people tweeting back and forth with him in the way that I don't know I can remember seeing another celebrity inside video games.
And like, celebrity is a big part of it. I mean, I think the last time there was a big celebrity involved in a video game would have been, I guess, one of those David Cage games like Detroit or Beyond Two Souls that had Ellen Page in it. This has a huge cast of celebrities. Norman Reedus is the main character. Guillermo del Toro has been body scanned, and so you see his body. They got a different voice actor. Nicholas Winding Refn, the director of Drive, is a body scan. Lindsay Wagner, the Bionic Woman, is a body scan, and she voices a character. Jeff Keighley, who is a big gaming personality. Conan O'Brien had a big segment on his show a few months back about being put into the game. And all of that draws attention into this game, whereas I don't think it's a mainstream game for that much mainstream attention. And so I think it is becoming a really weird event, a cultural sort of event, Death Stranding is. But I really dig it. I think a lot of people are not going to like it. I think it's crazy and weird, and a lot of people are not going to like that. But I really dig this game.
It sounds interesting. Yeah. I mean, in my head, I keep thinking about the movie The Postman, which I love that premise of, after you have an apocalypse, how do you, what do you connect? And the idea of the courier, the person who is the bridge between these things, sounds like an interesting starting point or something. So,
and that's the short version of the story, right? America is fractured and destroyed by this ghostly nuclear event, and you're literally crossing the country to connect people who are living in underground cities together so that the internet can be turned on. And also the internet runs via heaven, but it's not called heaven. It's called the beach. And everyone's hologram now. So
works for me. Alchemy was going to be my pick because I've really been enjoying it. That was a great recommendation from Brian. And it took me first to sort of get into understanding kind of Sutherland's way of sort of describing a thing, because you talk about arguing against logic, but understanding when he gets to the point, it's not that logic is flawed, it's that what people put in there as facts are flawed and stuff like that. And once I wrapped my head around like what he's really saying, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Because he'll take a chapter to sort of describe something where he could have said things that are counterintuitive, but it's his way of telling it. So I enjoyed it. I've been enjoying it very much so. And would you agree with that, Brian? Or?
Oh, 100%. And he indulges in my favorite of audiobook tropes, which is that breaking of the fourth wall where he gets to, the script says, and now look at this graph. And then just suddenly they are just speaking honestly. They're like, yeah, this doesn't really work in an audiobook. I don't know, picture a graph that kind of looks like this, and there's this thing, and it leads into the other thing, and it's kind of meant to convey blank, 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 and then they go back to reading it. I love that.
Yeah, and he's the perfect person to do the audiobook narration because he is a storyteller. He is a guy that you can tell is just gifted in that and gets mediums really well. And so I'm often, when I hear like an author is narrating their own book, I'm like, it's perfect. So, there's been a lot of criticism of the Terminator franchise and maybe sort of the change in the dynamics of like the focuses of more on like Sarah Connor as opposed to John Connor, et cetera. But like, I'm going to have to double down and say that I'm a big fan of that shift and that change in dynamic. And I am going to recommend the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah!
I went back and started watching them again because like, I'm not going to speak to any specific Terminator in general movie after T2, but let's say I've been monstrously, hugely disappointed by what's happened with every sort of effort to that. And the only thing that I ever really thought, I kind of dug T3 for some of the elements in a way, but the Sarah Connor Chronicles was one of these shows. This is like the third time I've gone through to watch it. Like, you know, for compact storytelling, I enjoy it. So
isn't, all right, you take exactly that cast, right? And those scripts, and you announce it today, and let's say they're going to reshoot it, right? So maybe it gets a little bit more of a budget, but it's going to be on HBO Max or Disney Plus or Netflix or something like that. I mean, I feel like it's a big deal, right? Like,
if we could undo the release of the latest Terminator film, yes.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah. Even if we're like, all right, I mean, obviously, you know, what's her name? Lena
Headey.
Headey. You know, she did this before she did Cersei.
Yeah.
Which is really the only good thing that came out of Terminator getting canceled was that she was free to do Game of Thrones. But beyond that, it's like, you know, you plug her back into that role. I think it's fine, right? Like, she's a great Sarah Connor. I don't think she becomes less of a great Sarah Connor for being 10 years older.
It's great, and they do, I don't know how non-spoilery we want to be, but they pull a bit of a storytelling surprise in the very first episode that made it for me. I mean, it was like, mm-hmm. like ballsy, and it lands, and they're crushing it.
Yeah, there was like, there's things you've heard people like, oh, we're going to go do this, and I'm like, well, that was done before, and that was really cool then, and this isn't. Some of the new ideas that people tried to bring into revamping the Terminator kind of like happened there. And I think they did it again. But if you get a chance, Sarah Connor Chronicles, it was not a super big budget show. It was a more compact show in what they did, but the focus was a big emphasis on, you know, John, who's now in high school, and his mom on the run. And yeah, I thought it was great. So I've just been enjoying it. So that's my pick.
Yeah. You know, I think the thing that show got that has been missing out of every Terminator film since is that it highlighted the idea that this is a chase movie and you're trying to put together this, like, some mysteries you can solve and others you can't, right? Like, but the big philosophical things are kind of there. But ultimately it's about getting from point A to point B and surviving, and not necessarily in the background is all the science fiction, you know, time travel, like, kind of stuff. But those are all ingredients to set up a very human, terrifying conflict. And all the movies, I feel like, have kind of been awash far more in the fact that, oh no, this, like, might as well be in space, and it might as well be Back to the Future, where they're going, you know, back and forth all the time, because that's really what matters. All the mythology, not necessarily the kind of visceral terror that the best Terminator stories are all about.
And so the writer and the showrunner of it was Josh Friedman, which is sort of the interesting thing there is he was actually brought into the writer's room of Terminator Dark Fate, which, among like a million other people, he's a co-writer of Avatar 2. And so clearly Cameron probably liked what he was doing there. And then he has coming out, he is the creator of the Snowpiercer TV series and the Foundation series for Apple. So I'm just thrilled that, you know, that Friedman is going to be doing some more cool stuff. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. But, you know, I wish, you know, that show was had another chance. So anyhow, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.